Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You want to hear a good story?
I'm standing, I'm rubbing my eyes. It's fucking like 3 in the morning. We're in there Keith making Richards fucking dough in all day. We couldn't stand up. Yeah. Fucking Keith, I'm like, Sal, is that fucking Keith Richards? No way. I'm like, yeah, it's the village. It's got to be him.
Like, dude, get a slice. Chill it. Chill it. I'm like, chill. Yeah, what is he talking about? Chill it.
He snorted his father's ass.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
So, and then he gets up on our bar. Right? And he's out of his mind. He starts doing air guitar. He's like, jumps up on the bar.
Should I knock him out? I was like, no way. What are you, crazy?
I didn't know who he was at first.
He jumped up and started doing air guitar?
Air guitar on our bar. Yeah. I didn't know who he was at first.
He was whacked?
But I turned right to
Keith Richards. He thought he was just some maniac was going to start breaking the straw.
Yeah, so I looked at him.
Jumping up on the furniture and everything.
I'm ready to knock somebody out. I'm making pizza all night long. I'm like, this guy's going to break my bar over here. So luckily they didn't knock out Keith Richards. That would have been pretty messed up.
You would have had a lot of people looking for you if you did.
I would have been famous. What, are you kidding me?
Hi, I'm Helen Holliman, editor-in-chief of Munchies, and welcome back to Munchies the Podcast. This season, we're taking the podcast on the road to explore the unique stories that American cities have to tell in food. But first, we can't leave New York without discussing one of the greatest things about this place, pizza. It's the late-night hero to drunk and starving stomachs. It's the thing you eat after you've been dumped and before watching your favorite film. Pizza is your friend. And New York pizza might be the greatest pizza in the world, especially if you ask New Yorkers. So that clip you just heard is from Saul Basili and Francis Garcia, who started New York pizza empire Artichoke Pizza. And they also come from a long line of pizza makers. We recently visited their shop on 14th Street with our friend and pizza expert, Frank Pinello.
My grandmother will, every time she calls me, she'll be like, Besta pizza, besta nonna, besta Francesco.
Frank owns Best Pizza, located in Brooklyn, and he's also host of our brand new pizza show, The Pizza Show, only on Munchies. But what actually makes New York pizza so great? When we started talking to Frank about our theories, he let us in on an overlooked ingredient, water. New York City's water supply system is one of the most extensive municipal water systems in the world, and it meets the needs of the city's over 8 million residents and visitors. So seeing as we have one of the most amazing systems in the world, is it possible that there's something in the water that's making New York pizza so great? To get some help answering this question, we met Frank outside of Artichoke Pizza on 14th Street. He got us up to speed on how the place came about.
I have a personal connection with Fran. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
But his... basically, my cousin Jay, who's my mother's best friend, is my Aunt Louise. Her son is Jay. He's a New York City sergeant right here at 10th Precinct. And him and Fran are very good friends. And when Artichoke was first opening, I was a cook, and he was telling me, my boy's opening this place, you gotta go check it out. You know, that he was telling, like, while it was opening, he was keeping me abreast of everything that was going on. So I kept hearing this, and as soon as they opened, I came down to check it out, and I was like, oh, like, these kids hit the nail on the head. And I very much was, like, in love with it, and I very much wanted to sort of come back, and I always, like, supported these guys. So I don't know Fran. This is my first time meeting him. No, I'm not nervous, but I'm happy to meet him finally because, you know, I want to tell him he inspired, like, Best Pizza for sure, but also, like, I think he helped, like, rejuvenate what's going on now in the pizza world in, like, New York, you know?
We went in and got some slices.
Maybe, like, two square slices.
Over the past 10 years, New York has seen a pizza renaissance. All across the city and the outer boroughs, pizza slices have become revitalized by young chefs who want to reinterpret what is possible in one slice.
Well, so thinking about the legends like DeFara's, Lucali, etc., like, you know, thinking about, like, you, and here we are at Artichoke, like, kind of younger generations that are making pizza, like, how would you describe the difference between kind of new wave pizza makers like yourself versus some of the older generations?
I think the older generations, the thing that was special about the older generations is that a lot of them, especially from Southern Italy, they kept a lot of the values of basics for restaurants that you would always respect, with simple things like always trying to give your customer the best ingredient, right? Always keeping your restaurant as clean as you possibly can. Always giving a customer service from a point of view of hospitality where you actually really want your customer to have a great experience, right? And so I think those were the old values, right? But then I think money got in the way and greed got in the way, in New York at least. And for many different reasons, you look at the bottom line, you could see a lot of ways to cheap out. But I think the new wave has gone back to what the old people did. They're starting to respect, we're starting to respect the simple things and the most important things, which is ingredients, always giving the people that you serve the best stuff that you could put on the table. You know, you don't serve prosciutto to your customer and then when lunchtime comes out you take out another prosciutto for yourself. You know what I mean? That's the good one. You know, that was the old way of doing things, you know. But now what you eat yourself, you should be able to serve people, you know. And I used to watch these things happen and I'd be like, I don't get it. And so that's my belief, is that a lot of these young kids are trained in great restaurants. A lot of them have passion, unbelievable passion. Some of them, like Fran, come from a pizza family, and they understand how to step it up a little bit more, you know, than what their parents are able to do. And the new guard is appreciating the old guard. They're appreciating their grandfathers that they saw do it. They're appreciating their, you know, uncles that they saw do it, and they see what happened in the middle. And that's really, like, what best, for me at least, for best pizza is that it's not, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel in any way. All we're trying to do is show as much respect to this style of pizza that we possibly can.
So then Francis and Sal showed up, a.k.a. the Pizza Cousins. Francis and Sal are also the hosts of the cooking channel show, Pizza Masters.
Beer? Yeah, you want a beer?
What do
you
like? Sure, whatever you got.
Keep wearing them. Keep wearing the Shirley Temple.
No, like, give him a Staten Island. Give him a flagship. You want a beer? Yeah. No, not a flagship. You want a flagship? Pretty good, the Staten Island beer. You'd be amazed.
Fucking Staten Island, man.
I got all these. Yeah, sure, why not?
These are, it's Staten Italy, baby.
Staten Italy.
All right, I keep it close.
That's the name of our cookbook, Staten Italy.
These are some true Staten Islanders we have right here.
That's right, Staten Island's in the house.
Staten Island's in the house. It's an important borough in New York, huh?
It's the forgotten borough, but, you know, it's definitely the borough.
Yeah, this
I
is
got
great.
Four bongos. You guys like four bongos? You. The beer bong? You want to pound
no,
with
no,
a beer bong?
No, no, arrasio, piano, piano. All
right. Where's my Johnny Walker Bull? I have some of that.
Salud.
Yeah, give me a little bit of that. I'm not a beer drinker, but I'll break
cheers,
out. I got a beautiful bottle of blue.
Thanks for...
To our host. And thanks for Jay Spitzbart, your cousin, who is the lieutenant in the 10th precinct, right?
Yep,
great guy, decorated lieutenant.
His
you know,
father was a police officer.
That's right. He's a real New Yorker cop on the beat, you know, doing his thing.
He's a big
thanks,
pizza
Jay.
Lover. He's a big pizza lover.
Right.
He's a huge
thanks
fan
for putting
of
this
artichoke.
Together, Jay, you know.
Huge
artichoke and best pizza, you know.
Let me ask you something. So when you guys first opened, my cousin told me, my friend Fran, he's opening up a pizzeria, and he's opening up on the Lower East Side. Did your mother has a pizzeria in Staten Island?
We had Basili's in Staten Island on Forest Avenue. It opened in 1988. It was on the North Shore of Staten Island. It was a staple of the North Shore of Staten Island. It was there for 24 years. It kept me and my cousin and all our brothers and sisters and new navigators and Mercedes, and kept us out of parking tickets, and it kept us in a nice house, nice park. It was really good to us, that
unbelievable
restaurant.
What one pizzeria could do.
It's
huh?
amazing. It's amazing what a pizzeria could do, you know. It's 24 years it was there for. But it was very good to us, and that's where we cut our teeth in the industry. You know, it goes back three generations in New York. Yeah.
What is it like coming from a pizza family, like learning from your parents?
We're like fourth generation in the restaurant business. You know, my father, our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers, It's so weird. Everybody in my father has four brothers and one sister, and they have all like five kids each. Every one of them has a pizzeria or a restaurant. Isn't that weird? It's like we all like, it's like all we know. It's like restaurant.
They all wear aprons.
Yeah, we all wear aprons. Exactly.
Are you guys Italian? Are you from Napoli?
No, I'm from Staten Island.
Yeah, exactly. Staten Italian. Yeah. I'm actually Sal's father's from Sicily, and his mother's my mother's sister. They're all Sicilian. My mother's all Sicilian. My father's half Sicilian, half Portuguese. That's how I get the Garcia name. I'm a quarter Portuguese. You know what my grandfather always said? And he was born on in Italy. He said, I'm not Italian. I'm American. You know, and that's what we are, right? When you think about it, you know, you're born here. You're an American.
Yeah,
you have Italian, blood in you and everything, but at the end of the day, you're American.
Absolutely.
So,
So I remember my cousin was telling me, Johnny Walker Blue.
That's not
blue.
Just a bottle of blue. That's a diesel bottle of blue.
That's
right
a big
there,
one.
Right?
That's a big one. A big one. And
how do we open
it's
this?
It's a couple fajoles right there. Yeah. That's not the cheap shit.
A couple artichoke pieces right here. We got a couple of little cups. Oh, nice.
So when you open, my cousin was telling me, he was like kind of keeping me abreast of everything that was going on, and that, you know, he's like, bro, you wouldn't believe how hard it is to open a place. He's like, these guys are trying to bring the oven through the front door, and they got a fine for $20,000 or something.
He remembers
like
that, huh, Jay?
Is that true?
Yeah, well, we didn't get a fine for $20,000, but what happened was, so we signed the lease in 2007, right? November of 07. We bought the ovens at auction on Halloween, right, of 07. That's October 31st. I got the keys the next day. So we went. It was a place called Caruso's down on Broadway, right, downtown, by the bowl over there, downtown Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought the ovens right from there to here. We didn't have work permits, but we weren't doing work. We just rolled the ovens in on dollies.
Right,
but people in the neighborhood, the pizzeria across the street down the block, he says, oh, these guys are working without permits.
They stuck it
they
to you.
They called the building department.
Son
they came down.
Bitch.
They put a big stop work order. I said, I didn't do no work. I said, the ovens are on the floor. I got no money to put them in storage. We had small money.
I remember that scaring the shit out of me when he told me that.
Well, you got luck. Your oven was in there, right? You got an old bread store.
100-year-old oven.
Yeah,
so
that's
I was
cool.
Just built.
When we were transporting and we almost tipped the truck over.
Well, nah, that was the mixer in the dough retarder. Oh, yeah. That was the mixer in the dough retarder. We went and bought them in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. We got everything on Craigslist.
You like a little walker, yeah?
I don't know if you guys in Brooklyn drink stuff that wasn't made in Brooklyn. You know, I don't know if that's legal, you know? So, yeah, it's kind of like...
So in our new pizza show with Frank, we're going to be exploring places around the world to find out what makes pizza great, from New Haven to Chicago and even Seoul, Korea.
All right, so here's an interesting story I'm going to share with you real quick. We got time? How long does this thing go for? However long? You're going to chop it up? I can go all day. You kidding me?
No worries.
All right. So being that you guys were just in Korea, there was a store we looked at back in 2008 after we opened this over here. DeForest, right? His daughter opened the store in Manhattan. It was called DeMarco's. It was on Houston and I think Thompson, down the West Village over there, right? They had an incident in there where the pizza guy got fired one day because the other pizza guy had a beef with him and he got the guy fired. The other guy, pizza guy's roommate came back and killed the pizza guy in the store. It was horrible, tragedy. Then he comes running out. He sees two poor auxiliary cops. They don't even carry guns. I don't even think they carry sticks. He sees both of them. He shoots them both. You could Google it. It's probably in 2006.
Who's that, Maggie? Maggie opened it, the daughter?
I don't know what her name is, but the daughter, yeah. They called it DeMarco's. That's his last name, the old man.
Right,
Dominic DeMarco.
Dom DeMarco.
So they got murdered in the store, outside the store. So this guy, Tony, what a character this guy was. He had a Korean wife. Nice friggin' guy. He bought the store, and I heard the story. I said, I can't believe you took the space. You know, such a horrible thing. As I came in, he goes, I was cleaning blood. They left all. The whole place was a mess. And then there was a big picture of the guy in the front of the store with this pizza. And it only had one little leaf of basil on it. I said, Tony, I said, what's with the one leaf of basil? He goes, that's all I had, he told me. And he was dead serious, the guy, you know? He was such a character. So anyway, he wanted to sell the store. And we didn't make a deal. Some with the landlord. I don't remember whatever it was. But he...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Moved to Seoul, Korea to open a pizzeria.
No shit.
That's why I was asking to see if maybe you ran into him.
Oh,
he must be doing good because he never came back.
I'm surprised.
He said if it didn't work out, I'm going to come back. He asked you for a job. All right, here, guys, cheers. Here, come on, cheers. Here's to pizza, Vice, Happy New Year.
The
Munchies. The Munchies. Ooh, that's smooth. Not for nothing, right?
I like that, man. It goes down nice.
At some point, we finally got around to the question at hand.
This show is obviously a pizza show, and I was asking Frank, like, about water, like New York water. Do you think that that has anything to do with making good pizza?
Right, you want my honest opinion? Yeah. Right, in the spirit of being a New Yorker, a native New Yorker, I have to say,
of course, it's
the water. But right, I'm not a scientist, right?
You don't got that hard water.
Listen, I always thought that. You know, me and Sal have a show of our own called Pizza Masters, and we travel all around the country, and we eat pizza everywhere. And we even own a store in Berkeley, California, and we thought that was going to be a big deal, the water. So I was saying to myself, the closest thing to me that tastes like New York water is Poland Spring water, right? So I says, if we have to, you only use 2 gallons of water to make a batch of dough, right? Then buy Poland Spring and use that water. It's not that expensive. The water's fine outside. The only place the water doesn't really work well is where the water's really hard, okay? Places like Arizona, places like Las Vegas.
Yeah, but in Arizona, you got a guy like Chris Bianco.
Maybe he's using bottled water. I don't know.
He might have a good
filter. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm just speculating. I still haven't
seen hard water.
One's hard, one's soft. But, no, so hard
it's
water.
It's mineral content.
Exactly. Something to do with the mineral content. Again, and you know, we're not Mythbusters. Maybe this is a good one for Mythbusters. But, you know, you ever notice you go to Las Vegas, you try to wash your hair, and it doesn't lather the shampoo?
Doesn't come off your skin as easily.
Exactly.
Like when you wash
different.
Your hands.
Yeah. It's noticeably different. It's totally different. And you got to think, if the water's hard, the dough's going to be hard, right?
Yeah.
Not to get too much into it, you know.
But to me, I think, you know, water is a huge ingredient, right, just like anything else, right? So think about it. If you start off with great water, you have... It's easier to make great pizza. So you have a pH balance here in New York that's basically 7%, right? So you have almost even pH. You have minerals that react well with the proteins inside of the actual flour. So in my opinion, it's like you have so many pizzerias in New York because you don't have to be a genius to make good pizza in New York. Anybody can make good pizza in New York if you have a recipe.
Well, when you go to a different state,
it makes a little bit more. It makes it a little harder because you don't have that base ingredient to start with. That's how I've also, you know, I've been lucky enough to travel around and make some pizza in different places.
I gotta be honest. I traveled around a lot, and I'm surprised how good the pizza is outside of New York.
Yeah.
I mean, you find great pizza everywhere.
Didn't we just say that?
You know, I had great pizza in New Mexico. Yeah, how was the water in Korea?
Not great.
You know, I gotta say, drinking.
But
wise,
as long as you, but if you play with the yeast, right? If you play with your yeast content, if you play with the type of yeast that you're using, if you play with the way that you process, then anybody can get a good product. Right? There's good bread everywhere, right?
Well, not everywhere, but listen, we have a store in Berkeley, California. We make the same recipe of pizza right there. We use the water right out of the faucet. It's delicious.
Yeah, same.
If you put a slice of the pizza from there, a slice of pizza from here, I can't tell them apart.
No?
They're the same. I bring all the same cheese, the same tomatoes.
If it's not the water, what is it that makes great pizza?
It's the person that's making the pizza, number one. It's the ingredients. So, like, to give you an example, Palio Mozzarella. I use Palio Mozzarella. I pay a premium for it in California, a big premium. Even the tomatoes I use. They got great tomatoes in California, but I'm superstitious. I'm not going to change my brand of tomatoes. I pay a premium for the tomatoes. So, yeah, I mean, there's some things that you can't get in, you know, the rest of the country that you can get over here, you know. And there's some things that you probably pay a lot less money for, so it doesn't make sense to buy them in other places in America. And, you know, a lot of it, too, you know, we have the ovens that we use, not your oven, you use a coal oven, but the traditional New York-style pizza is made in a Baker's Pride or a Bari brick deck oven. Okay, that oven gives you a different product than any brick oven does, conveyor belt oven, any kind of like, you know, these high-tech fancy things that these chains use, they don't give you the same product. So that has a lot to do with it, too. If you're comparing New York pizza to everybody else's pizza, that's a big part of it.
You can have two people with the same ingredients making the same pie, and it's going to come out totally different.
Right, exactly.
It's all about the distribution of the cheese, the sauce, and how long you cook it for, and how hot you have your oven.
But, you know, I mean, listen, I've had pizza all over the country. You know, I've had good pizza all over the country. I have bad pizza all over the country. I've had good pizza all over New York, and I've had bad pizza all over New York. Taste-wise, the actual water, when you drink it, New York water is delicious.
Yeah,
they should bottle it and sell it all over the country. Yeah, yep. It's the most delicious water you ever tasted. Hands down, nothing could compare. And it's not just because I grew up on it. Yeah. It really is delicious.
So can you guys talk about, like, you know, you guys are open super late here. Like, what is it like from when you open the doors to you close at 4 a.m., right?
We close at, like, 6 a.m.
Oh, 6 a.m. All right. What's
7.
The nighttime is the busiest part of the day.
The nighttime is the busiest part, yeah.
Who's the last customer that shows up here at 6 a.m.?
The last customer that shows up at 6 a.m.?
Sometimes you got people going to work at 6 a.m.
You got the daytime. You got the morning people that are coming in.
So has a breakfast slice?
We the people getting off of work,
like,
you know.
Breakfast, yeah.
Cops come. Yeah, they come.
Ambulance, Con Ed.
Fucking ambulance people.
People getting off of work at clubs and stuff. The bartenders, they're all coming. You know, when they all close up shop, they come by.
Industry.
Yeah, I mean, you get the people, they party, right? The bars close at 4. By the time they throw everybody out of the bar, it's 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. After that, all the people who work in the bar, they got to count their money, count their tips. Yeah. They leave there 5:30, 6 in the morning. They got to eat, too.
Everyone's starving.
You got your cab drivers are coming. They're getting a slice of pizza. And you got your people who are staying out partying really hard. And they're stumbling down the block. And then, you know, that's actually when it gets fun again in there.
To me, that's really more of a service to the neighborhood than it is a business decision. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you guys know better than me because I haven't stayed open that late. But you're actually being providing more of a service to the neighborhood than making money during those hours, or what would you say?
Well, it's both. So, you know, it's both. You provide a service, and you know, and you make a couple of bucks doing it at the same time. You know,
we just close to clean a couple hours a day. That's it.
Like Wohop, you know, Wohop. They're open all the time. You know, and that was my
staple.
When we came out here, my philosophy was like, you know, okay. Growing up in Staten Island, we would drive to Wohop because it was an alternative to a Greek diner, and it was always open. You can get there 5:30 in the morning. You can get fried rice. You can get, you know, fucking whatever you want. You know?
Some areas don't call for a late-night spot. You know, you got to kind of be in an area that's that has a lot of nightlife.
But in the beginning, when we started staying open late, it wasn't like it is now. It took a while to develop that late-night following.
Right.
And, you know, I just says, if I just stay every night, I'm going to stay in here all night, wait. Eventually, people will know, and they'll come, and that's what happened. You know, after a while, you know, 6-7 months, a year, we got known as a late-night destination, open all night, and, you know, it built on that. And, you know, we became more of like a late-night, you know, nightlife almost, you know, brand in New York. You know, we have some great real estate in downtown Manhattan. We're in Meatpacking, we're in Greenwich Village, you know. We cater to a lot of nightlife, and, you know.
I think a lot of people were able to, especially like the police officers, like guys like my cousin, the fire department guys, were able to depend on a place like you because they knew that they'd come here and that you guys were open. What always stuck out to me was when you first opened, there was always a line around the block, right? Always a line around the block, and it was fascinating. Like, everyone's waiting online. I need to be on that line, right? So you jump on the line, and sure enough, I walked up, and I got a great slice. I was able to drink a beer, eat my slice, walk out the door, and jump right on the train. Yeah. Classic New York-style pizzeria. What I was speaking to them about was I felt like you guys were one of the first ones to take a regular by-the-slice pizzeria and eliminate the old man, right? You eliminated the old man. And you put some young blood in there, but it felt cool, right? Like you had the lamp in the front that was, like, funny and a little bit nostalgic.
My cousin, my brother, his brother, you know, good friends from, you know, that we grew up with. That's who we only made pizza with, you know, the whole time.
Why do you think people, I was asking him, like, pizza's so democratic, like, people are obsessed with pizza in a way that they aren't with anything else?
So I think a lot of times when you ask people what's your favorite pizza, right, a lot of them, you know, are going to say a place that they grew up eating pizza at. You know, whether you're from, if you're from Cincinnati, if you're from Long Island, if you're from Boston, wherever. A lot of people say, oh, this place, Dominic's, when I was a kid, I used to, because they associate it with their childhood and good memories, and it takes them back to a place that's happy or young or whatever. And that's what I gather when I talk to a lot of people. Because a lot of people, okay, if you're in the boroughs, you hear DeFaro, you hear, you know, you hear Artichoke, you hear, of course you hear Artichoke, you hear Best Pizza. You hear who else? You know, Joe's Pizza.
Joe's,
you hear
Roberta's.
Roberta's Pizza. Grimaldi's. Whatever. Patsy's. There's so many great places. Lombardi's. We can't leave them out.
Of course not. Prince Street. Lucali's.
Lucali's. You know, and they're all great.
Yeah.
So, what were we talking about? It's a personal thing, right? Very few things in life are as personal as pizza. But, you know, oftentimes when you're talking to people that are not from the boroughs, they say a place that I never heard of. And I say, where is that place? Oh, it's right near where I grew up. It's near this high school. You know, I used to go to high school. My father used to take me there. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, it's a nostalgic chord, right? It's a nostalgic chord that it hits.
Right.
Especially, like, you know, some of the memories that you have. I mean, I remember my grandfather used to walk me up the block to Da Vinci's. It's on 18th Avenue and 66th Street. Bentoners, and we used to have a slice together, and I adore my grandfather before he passed away. He was my idol. Like, everything he did, I wanted to do, and having that slice with him made me love that pizzeria. And when it was time for me to, like, show, like, you guys, we did the show, the Munchies show, the first place I went back to was Da Vinci's, or to Villa Vate, to the bakery, other places that were, like, yeah, the best. Just places that, like, you know, as a kid, they just meant so much. You saw the older people in your family eating these slices of pizza, and you wanted to be like them. You wanted to understand what it was. And also, it tastes good, you know. Tomato sauce and cheese and a crust with a good ratio. Anyone from 8 years old to 80 years old loves that flavor. And if it's done right, you know, you really can't go wrong. So.
When I was a little kid, there was a pizzeria near my house, right? We didn't own it or anything, but it was down a block from where I lived. It was called Casaiello. And there was a guy, his name was Paulie. Go figure, right? Big, fat Italian guy, Paulie. And he owned the place with an Irish guy, right? The Irish guy always looked like he had a couple of drinks. His face was always red. He always looked mad. And the guy, Paulie, was always just a sweetheart. The Irish guy was mad. Paulie was always smiling.
Paulie
wore a big gold chain. The Irish guy might hear this. He might say, look at that. Anyway. Paul used to wear a big gold chain with a gold pizza cutter on it. And I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right there, I was like, I'm not going to school. I'm going to work in my mother's restaurant. Yeah, I was like, I'm getting one of those pizza cutters. I still don't have one, right?
Yeah.
But I never forgot that. The way it hung, he wore the white T-shirt, and it had the sweat marks on it. He was a heavy guy, you know? It gets hot back then. The Irish guy had the little fighting Irish on his arm, the Notre Dame. The little leprechaun he had the leprechaun. He was from Bay Ridge, the Irish guy. Figures.
But, that pizza cutter, right?
Yeah.
I sweat that pizza cutter. I'm telling you, man.
I love that pizza
cutter.
And the wheel turns. Oh. On the bottom, the wheel actually turns. The wheel turns. Yeah.
We gotta get this guy for his birthday this year. Yeah.
I thought that was gangster. I was
that
like, I'm getting into the pizza business.
I'm not even
gonna
lie, that's gangster. Me and my brother used to say something.
So that wraps up the latest episode of Munchies, the podcast. Thanks so much to Francis and Sal of Artichoke Pizza, and a huge thanks to Frank Pinello of Best Pizza. On the next episode of the podcast, we're taking you on the road to my hometown of Austin, Texas, where we're kicking things off at South by Southwest. Go watch our brand new video series with Frank, The Pizza Show, only on Munchies.tv. I'm Helen Holliman. I'll talk to you real soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.